Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Cremery. The Alaska Office of Children's Services has struggled with staffing for years, from high vacancies and turnover to high caseloads. And data shows caseworker demographics don't line up with the state's or the system's children. KTOO's Jamie Deep reports.
According to the 2023 progress report on the state's child welfare system, less than 9% of caseworkers are Alaska Native or American Indian, and more than 70% are white. The agency is turning to training and partnering with tribes to address the gap. Indigenous children have been overrepresented in Alaska's child welfare system for years. State population estimates from last year show that close to a quarter of people under the age of 18 are Alaska Native or American Indian. But data from the Office of Children's Services, or OCS, show they consistently make up around two-thirds of the children who are in out-of-home care, like a foster home. It's been as high as almost 70% in the past. Mary Johnson is the Senior Director of Family Services at the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska and worked as a caseworker for a tribal organization earlier in her career. She says the racial disparity concerns her.
How do we connect with these 69% of our families? If they are from one population, it would make sense that we would want to identify people to work with the population who are like them.
A representative from the Office of Children's Services said in an email, quote, OCS does not view this as a concern in the sense of a problem to be fixed, but it does guide our efforts to provide culturally responsive care, end quote. She wrote that care includes partnering with local tribes in the state on cases, prioritizing hiring local staff in the communities they serve, and providing ongoing training on cultural responsiveness. Tlingit and Haida is one of the tribes that partners with the state on cases that apply to the Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA. That federal law lays out minimum requirements when taking on a case involving Indigenous children. The state must try to place children with their family members or in their local communities first. Johnson says it's important to have tribal representation when working on these child welfare cases.
It makes sense that if you're not able to recruit and hire Alaska Native people, at least partner with tribes, at least have tribal partners be a part of the decision-making process when making decisions about how our children and families are being cared for and treated.
Johnson says the tribe largely employs Alaska Native people in its family services office. She says it's important to have Alaska Native people working on cases, either as a caseworker or as a tribal partner.
I do think in the field of child welfare, when it's something so serious and so personal, that the people making the decisions for the group of people that are involved really should have knowledge on how this other group exists in this world, right, and how we parent.
Trevor Storrs is the president of Alaska Children's Trust, a nonprofit that advocates and works toward ending child abuse and neglect in the state. He says hiring people whose racial demographics line up with the people they serve is important, but it's hard to focus on that when the entire system is strained.
They're doing really important work, and their hearts are out to protect kids, but they're also challenged. There have been audits, there have high caseloads, they can't keep staff. There's just all these challenges.
Storrs says training on cultural responsiveness is part of social work programs, which is why he says it's important for the state to hire credentialed workers. That also isn't always happening. An audit performed this year on OCS shows many people hired do not have a degree in social work. The state even hired caseworkers with only a high school diploma. Storrs says the state should be looking for ways to improve the system as a whole. He says he wants to see a focus on supporting children and families and preventing the problems that lead to OCS intervening.
It's less kids that aren't not going to school, less kids and families addicted to substances. And for us and for OCS, it would be less cases of child abuse and neglect.
Research from KC Family Programs shows some children benefit from the system, but they often leave state custody with lasting negative effects on their education, mental health, and employment. A change to the system might be on the horizon. A federal class action lawsuit against the state aiming to reform the system is awaiting a judge's decision. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
And the Mayor's Task Force on Short-Term Rentals wrapped up 4 months ago. It was mostly made up of homeowners, not renters. And its findings offered no immediate recommendations on regulations or restrictions for the Juneau Assembly to consider. KTOO's Clarice Larson looks at what happens now.
Juneau has been grappling with a housing shortage for decades. Studies pointing to Juneau's acute lack of it date back to the 70s. City officials have tried finding ways to create new housing for long-term renters. And in recent years, there's also been a push to crack down on short-term rentals, like Airbnbs or VRBOs. City data and other sources suggest that there are likely around 300 to 400 short-term rentals in Juneau, but that number could be even higher.
There is very distinct opinions on it, and some people are for them and some people are against them.
That's Mayor Beth Weldon. Right now, short-term rentals are largely unregulated, although the city started requiring people to register them in 2023. Weldon launched a short-term rental task force in January to assess the market and make recommendations that improve housing availability. Of the 11 members, only one was a renter. The group concluded its meetings in early June and offered some recommendations to the assembly. But Weldon says she had hoped for a clearer direction.
They were pretty benign recommendations, and if that's what the assembly wants, that's good, but I was hoping to see a little bit more.
Assemblymember Wade Bryson, who chaired the committee, says one positive change that did come out of the task force was requiring rental sites to take care of sales tax on behalf of local operators. The assembly approved that change back in May. The task force also recommended non-regulatory actions for the assembly to take, like conducting an economic impact study on short-term rentals. But members couldn't agree on what else to implement or when. Bryson says the committee faced a lot of hurdles. Not everyone on the 11-member task force showed up to every meeting. He says that made it hard to gauge a consensus and led to a lot of split votes.
It was difficult to get support to take such a hard stance one direction or the other.
He says he thinks a better use of city time and resources is to focus on creating new housing opportunities, like the Telephone Hill redevelopment project.
The data says they're not causing the housing crisis. And even if we restrict them, that's not going to move the needle and get more houses into the market.
The task force suggested basing its recommendations on Juneau's rental vacancy rate, the overall number of vacant rental units. In a final report shared with the assembly, the task force concluded that the current 3.9% vacancy rate in Juneau is low, meaning there isn't enough open housing to go around. But they left it up to the assembly to decide what rate would justify taking action. Bryson says it's unlikely that the assembly will pick this topic back up anytime soon.
It did not appear with the data that we were like in a crisis mode because of short-term rentals. It just isn't making that level of impact.
Assemblymember Alicia Huskandes also served on the task force. In a text message, she said she, quote, wasn't satisfied by the amount of output from the task force, end quote, and intends to take the topic back up in the coming years. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And although voting for Fat Bear Week in Katmai National Park closed last month, Juneau's black bears are really starting to pack on the pounds and keep from starving during hibernation. And they're going for whatever they can find. KTOO's Alex Solomon has more.
It's about 9 p.m. at the Triangle Club, a bar in downtown Juneau. At the sight of a hefty black bear in the alleyway across the street, the bartender and patrons dash outside, slam their fists on a metal trash can, and yell at the bear to go away for its own sake.
Hey, come on, bear!
The bear is sniffing at a row of garbage cans that are bear-resistant, but not bear-proof. The bear glances back once at the row of people standing on the sidewalk and then saunters up the stairs. According to downtown residents, this scene has replayed most nights this month. That's because autumn is a time when bears in Alaska enter hyperphagia, a period of gluttony driven by insatiable hunger. Carl Koch is Juneau's wildlife management biologist at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He says that the season's change, marked by a decrease in daylight and drop in temperature, triggers bears to devour massive amounts of food now so they can survive the winter. But their usual diet is not as abundant.
Yeah, I mean, there may be still some salmon around, but they're rapidly running out of natural foods.
The grasses they eat tend to be more nutritious in the spring, and berry season has ended. So Koch says he's been getting calls about bears rummaging through the trash. He says that will probably slow down in November and December when bears head uphill to hibernate. During hyperphagia, black bears' heart rates can double, and they tend to venture farther to find a meal. They spend almost all day, every day, eating. It amounts to around 20,000 calories per day, double what they typically eat during the summer, and they can put on around a third of their body weight. Koch says the availability of resources, including trash, might make them stay out longer.
They can delay hibernation if there's food out.
He says he received a report of people feeding a young bear downtown, which is illegal in Alaska and could dangerously train the local bears to associate humans with food. The department euthanized two bears last year that had become aggressive around trash bins on South Franklin Street. Koch recommends keeping food out of vehicles, bringing bird feeders indoors until winter, and keeping trash in secured bins. And he says to follow the city ordinance to put garbage out for pickup no earlier than 4 a.m. on trash day. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
10 women will be inducted into the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame tonight, including Jacqueline Estes, an Alaska Native journalist. Estes most recently was a national correspondent for Indian Country Today and also worked as a news director at KNBA. Estes is Tlingit with ties to Wrangell, but she's not the only Alaska Native to be honored tonight.
Another Alaska Native is my great-grandmother, Tilly Paul Tamry. She was a civil rights leader in the early 20th century.
Estes says it's an honor to be inducted along with her great-grandmother. Last week, when Estes helped to co-host KNBA's live coverage of the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention, she talked about how her great-grandmother got arrested in 1922.
She was walking down the street, and she saw Charlie Jones, Chief Shakes. She stopped to visit with him, and he said he'd just been kicked out of voting.
Estes says her grandmother accompanied Chief Shakes back to the polls, and he was again refused the right to vote. Shakes was told he could not vote because he wasn't a citizen. The two were indicted. Tamary's son, William Paul, later successfully defended them. Two other Alaska Natives are being inducted into the Hall of Fame, Catherine Gottlieb, a Supiak leader in Native healthcare, who served 30 years as president of South Central Foundation. And the late Ada Blackjack Johnson is also being recognized. Johnson was a Inupiaq and the sole survivor of a doomed Arctic expedition in the 1920s. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 47 degrees and overcast this afternoon. Tonight, it looks like we're going to get some more heavy rain, and that looks true tomorrow as well. And rain is on the forecast for the rest of this week, with temperatures between the mid-30s and low 40s. This is KTOO.